the rest of the story. Lewis trudged into the corner pharmacy where he always took his morning coffee, only today he was much later than usual. The druggist, an old friend, remarked that Lewis looked terrible. Lewis replied, "You should be inside my skull." "Headache?" the druggist asked. "Hangover," Lewis answered. And he explained about the party the night before, the party at Jenny's. Lewis had been laughing and drinking and playing the piano and drinking, and about dawn he stumbled home, and he had just toppled into bed when the phone rang. It was the associate manager down to the concert hall telling Lewis that he had to conduct the orchestra that very afternoon at 3 o'clock. Lewis had never imagined it would happen. Assistant conductors in those days simply did not give public performances. They were little more than psychological safety nets for the conductors who did get to perform. But now the unimaginable had happened. The scheduled guest conductor was ill. The orchestra's principal conductor was snowed in at his Stockbridge farm. So Lewis, the assistant conductor, ready or not, was going to have to face the music, and without so much as a rehearsal. Well, the druggist grinned. Wasn't that what Lewis wanted? The opportunity to get up and wave his arms in front of all those musicians? "But I have a hangover," Lewis reminded his friend, "and I have had no sleep." Well, the druggist grinned again a little more slyly this time, and he had just the thing, he said. He told Lewis to hold out his palm. Into his hand, he lightly dropped two little pills. "Now listen carefully," the pharmacist told his ashen-faced friend. "You put these in your pocket, and then right before you walk on stage, swallow them." What were they, Lewis wanted to know? Well, one was an amphetamine, the other a barbiturate. They would pep him up and calm him down at the same time. Lewis put the two little pills in his pocket. He went for a walk in the park, and at 3 sharp, he was backstage at the concert hall, standing in the wings, trembling uncontrollably, his hand thrust into the pocket with pills in it, listening as the symphony's associate manager was telling the audience that they would not be hearing the conductor they had paid to hear. At the announcement, a chorus of groans rose from among the concertgoers. Lewis felt sick. He took the two little pills from his pocket, stared at them, lying innocently, eagerly in his hand. One swallow, and the sickness would pass, and the courage would return, and the world would bow before him, waiting to be conquered. But then Lewis looked again, and the two little pills seemed different somehow. "I may need you," he whispered to them at last, "but I don't want you. I don't want help from anybody but God." Then, with all of his might, Lewis flung the two little pills into the darkness backstage, and he strode on stage, and a star was born. It's described on the pages of music history, the subsequent lifelong success of that once virtually unknown assistant conductor, the brilliant and incomparable career, how it began that autumn afternoon more than half a century ago, because that New York Philharmonic concert was radio broadcast nationwide, became a slow news day the next day, and that put the substitute conductor on page one of the New York Herald Tribune and the New York Times. But now I hope you'll never forget the significant whispered decision that may have made the big difference. The two little pills not taken by a young musician born Lewis and later named Leonard Bernstein. Because now you know the rest of the story.